March Madness is here, and if you want to enhance the experience, join me, Gary Parrish, and my colleague Matt Norlander on the Ion College Basketball Podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. We have new episodes at least three times a week and at the end of every night of the NCAA tournament. So before you go to bed, hang with us or know we'll be there when you awake. We'll break down games, make picks against the spread. Most of all, we'll have a blast. So join us on the Ion College Basketball Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's go to the phone lines right now to be joined by Josh Vernier, who is live in, now he's not at Kauffman Stadium, actually. They don't have a game today. He is at home. He is about to head to Hollywood Casino because we are having a Royals Roundtable Friday, March 28th. That is today, inside the sports book at Hollywood Casino. Vern's going to be there. Michael Massey is going to be there. Kyle Isbell is going to be there for a Q&A that starts at 6. There's also going to be a meet and greet with the players. That starts around 6:45. Come up, grab a beer, say hello, take a picture with Michael Massey, take a picture with Kyle Isbell, and get, you know what, get your baseball signed by Josh Vernier. That should be the real reason that people head out there. Vern, how you doing today, my man?
I think you got it all backwards, man. You want to take a picture with me, get their autograph, and then hit up that sports book, make some wise bets.
No, I mean, I said it right the first time. I don't want anything signed by Kyle Isbell. I want my Royals jersey autographed by the voice, you are the people's voice of the Kansas City Royals, Josh Vernier.
Hey, I'm not going to fight you on that. I'll take that. And excited for tonight. Should be a good time. Heard it's going to be a great turnout. Hoping that all Royals fans that are of age can make the trip out there to Hollywood Casino. Two homegrown Royals talking about, well, in Kyle Isbell's case, I think his fifth opening day. And Michael Massey's second opening day yesterday. So didn't go the way that the boys would have wanted, but this is certainly a team after what they went through last year that is not going to be shook by one painful loss to open up the season.
So let's start with this. I led the show with, I think if you were looking for reasons on why the Royals can make the postseason, they were available on opening day. When they scored the three-run inning, they scored that run because of Bobby Witt's speed. They also scored it because of Vinny Pasquantino. If this team is going to do something, you're going to need those players to be at the middle of it, and they were in the middle of how this team got a lead, why they lost the lead, questions with the outfield that led to some big mistakes from the Royals, and there's also questions about the bullpen and do they have enough arms in the bullpen to hold on to leads like they had yesterday. I think it is the ultimate, you can look at it glass half full, glass half empty, depending on what side you want to view it from.
And because of what they did last season, I would assume, I believe I know, that a majority of people listening right now decide to look at the glass half full. The Lucas Ursag, Hunter Harvey, Carlos Estevez, 8 up, 8 down. That choose to look at, yeah, Vinny having a nice day. Michael Massey coming through with that big sacrifice fly. I understand Kyle Isbell and Dairon Blanco's base running blunder was the, you know, negative light of the game. It's not obviously the sole reason why you lost, but if we're going to talk about the outfield offensive disappointment of 2024, you know, Kyle Isbell gave you offensively, at least at the dish, everything that you could ask from a number nine hitter. A big double to jumpstart that three-run third inning. He's the first one to score on that three-run bomb off of the bat of Vinny Pasquantino. And then I don't know how he turned and squared up that bunt to advance Dairon Blanco to third base. So for as much as we talk about the issues offensively from left and right field, MJ Melendez and Hunter Renfroe respectively, what we're really talking about is every position outside of shortstop, catcher, and first base, because Vinny, Salvi, and Bobby, we know, need to be very good to great for this team to get back to October. But if they're going to improve on what we saw last season, if the sophomore album's going to be better than the debut that we saw last season, well, you need someone else to come up alongside those three. Jonathan India's a no-brainer. To me, he's in that class with Vinny, Bobby, and Salvi, where they need to be very good to great for this team to get back to October. Can Massey be that number five? Can he be that protection for Salvador Perez? There was stretches last season, especially in the second half and even into October, where the answer was a resounding yes. The question is, can he stay healthy for a full 162 and be that number five hitter all season long? He's the best candidate, in my opinion.
Right now, we're talking to our Royals insider, Josh Vernier, getting his thoughts on what happened yesterday from opening day. What do you think happened with Kyle Isbell? I mean, I'm at the game, and I'm just trying to figure out. You had runner on first and third with no outs. You got to figure out a way to scratch one of those runs across. And then we go from runner on first and third with no outs to now there just being a runner on first with two outs. And I'm thinking, Kyle Isbell, what are you doing here? Can you take us through that play? What did you see?
Yeah, well, on contact, but the ball hit to the third baseman, Jose Ramirez. Dairon Blanco heads home on a contact play. And instead of running into the out and assuring first and second with only one out, he starts to get himself into a rundown. And when someone with the speed of Dairon Blanco's in a rundown, the reason why he's putting himself in that position is because he believes he can stay in that rundown to allow Kyle Isbell to replace him at third base and Jonathan India to move up to second base. So even though, yeah, we lose an out and Dairon's going to run into one, he took it upon himself to try and bide some time for Izzy to replace him at third base, India to get up to second. And as Isbell's making the decision and leaking further and further off of second base, Dairon begins his, you know, the third leg of the rundown as he's for the second time going from third to home. And in Izzy's vantage point, I'm at least listening to what he said after the game, knowing the speed of Dairon Blanco, knowing the speed of Jose Ramirez, from the vantage point of Kyle Isbell, he's getting to third base because there's no way that Ramirez is going to be able to lay that tag on Blanco. Now, was Dairon out of gas? Did he concede a second too early? Possibly. But if you are Kyle Isbell, you need to be assured that you're going to be safe at third base when you make that decision to venture as far off of second base as he ultimately did. So I think both parties were in the wrong. Both were being aggressive and utilizing one of the reasons why they're on this big league roster, and that is their above average base running, and their aggressive mistake ultimately cost him a run and maybe cost him a game. But again, there were so many other aspects. I mean, you look at the final line and Ben Lively outpitches Cole Reagans. That can't happen. You can't go five innings without a base hit, cough up a 3-0 lead. So many things that went into it, but certainly that base running blunder for a team that is built around starting pitching, defense, and base running, to have that be one of the reasons why, maybe the biggest reason why, you lost to a division rival, the defending division champions, a team that you believe you're going to be in a dogfight with for the next 6 months. You know, that's a game that we're not going to forget anytime soon. So yeah, it certainly stings when base running's at the center of the L.
How short of a leash do you think that Hunter Renfroe is going to have? They signed him to a 2-year deal. We are now halfway through that contract. There's a lot of conversation about MJ Melendez. Is this being a very important pivotal season for him? And we'll talk more about him coming up in just a bit. I don't know if Hunter Renfroe gets, 90 days to figure this thing out. I kind of think with the expectations that the Royals have on this season, I think that Hunter Renfroe maybe has like 45, 60 days to kind of get things going this year. I think his leash could be the shortest of any player on their team.
But who's moving him out? Who's that right fielder that you're saying, all right, Hunter, we gave you an opportunity. You're on your way out. So-and-so, the job is yours. I mean, are you trying to see more Dairon Blanco? Is it MJ Melendez in right field and, Mike Hell at third? So then we get Massey and India in left. I think you'll be exposed eventually defensively there. And if, Renfroe has the shortest leash, we all acknowledge that MJ's right there next to him, debating who has the shortest of the two leashes. Well, they're your two best defensive corner outfielders on the team, more than likely, or at least two of the three best defensive corner outfielders on the team. So, I look down to the minor leagues, and we're not having the Jack Caglione conversation. Nelson Velasquez and Nick Prado can play the corner outfield, but those guys did absolutely nothing to impress in spring training. I don't know what they would have done to suddenly usurp Hunter Renfroe on the roster. Tyler Gentry, former first-round pick Gavin Cross. Cross, John Rave, those guys are interesting. They had really good springs. I don't know if you're going to place them on the 40-man roster prior to you know, late May. Yeah, I think Renfro's at least getting 2 months. I think MJ's getting, you know, I mean, you saw it yesterday's game, and this is what Q's been doing for years. You know, he's going to play the matchups. MJ, Mikel, Massey, Izzy, all of these guys are going to be platooned at times. If your name's not Bobby or Jonathan India, Vinny or Salvi, you're not assured of those four at-bats every single game.
Right now, we're talking to our Royals insider, Josh Vernier, here for a couple of more minutes. My biggest take with the Royals this season is, to me, at the top, it comes down to two players. You always mention what a guy looks like on the back of his baseball card. If you look at Seth Lugo, last year is an anomaly from him. That's not what you usually can expect. Can he do that for a second season where you got him, you got Reagans, you got Waka, you got a really strong 1-2-3 that should be able to stem any tide that you have from the rest of the team? And also about Vinny Pasquantino, can he continue to be a consistent run producer for this team and take that next step? Those are my two biggest questions. Outside of those, what are you looking for? What questions do you have about the Royals heading into this season?
Well, those two, those are two of the big six, the baseline guys, where it's almost cancel Christmas if Lugo, Waka, Reagans, Bobby, Salvi, or Vinny are not very close to the guy that we saw a season ago. Yeah, okay, yeah, Lugo's season was an anomaly. Fine, Waka's 2024 was his best season in 7 years. It was the best year of Cole Reagans' life. It was one of the 8 best years we've ever seen out of any shortstop in baseball history. So that's a lot to ask from Bobby Witt Jr. Now, Salvi's coming up on his 35th birthday. Can he really repeat what he did at the age of 34? You know, to me, Vinny's the guy I'm the most confident in his ability to duplicate what he did in 2024. Outside of those constants or guys that need to be constants for this team if they're going to stay in the race, the division race. My biggest question of the season and even dating back to the offseason was, can they replace the innings that you receive the above average, right? Better than league average innings, 170 plus from Brady Singer. You know, what you point out with Lugo and Vinny, and I elaborate on with those big six, that now, we can't even have a conversation about October if those six don't match their 2024. But in addition, if you're going to improve on 2024, if you're going to be a better team, the bullpen's improvement can help, possibly help replace those lost innings from Brady Singer. But, man, it's more than Singer. Look at the first half of last year. Singer and Alec Marsh, I had conversations at differing points in those first 3 months about, man, is Alec Marsh the third best pitcher in this rotation right now? Is Brady Singer the third best pitcher in this rotation right now? I mean, there were, conversations about can Brady Singer backdoor his way into the All-Star game. You know, your 4 and 5 starters last year for the first half of that campaign were outstanding. Your rotation was one of the 3 best in all of baseball for damn near the whole season. Can Lugo and Reagans and Waka replicate what they did last year, but can you get a Singer Marsh type of production in the first half from Bubich, Lorenzen, and possibly Alec Marsh when he returns later on in April? It always comes back to pitching, and for as much improvement as we're expecting to see out of this bullpen, a bullpen's only as good as its rotation allows it to be. So you need innings logged the way that they were last year to allow Estevez and Hunter Harvey and Lucas Erceg to be the type of dominating force at the back end of this pitching staff that we're expecting. So my biggest question after those big six are the 4 or 5 in this rotation, which right now Chris Bubich and Michael Lorenzen.
Last thing here, Vernon, I'll get you out of here with this. As someone who, you have not grown up a Royals fan, but at this point you are in it. You've been in it now for a decade. You know this team as well as anybody. Do you think the Royals can do anything to get that benefit of the doubt? Because I'm guessing. I did not listen to the post game yesterday. I did not see the text line. I'm assuming the text line was a rain of negativity.
Yeah, didn't even open it.
Yep. Yeah, where, if it's If it's KU that gets off to a slow start, there's a confidence that Bill's going to figure it out. Chiefs could start 1-2. It doesn't matter. They got Patrick. They got Andy. They'll figure it out. Obviously, the Royals haven't had the long-term success of those two organizations. But can you see us getting to a point in a, let's say, the next 12 to 18 months where there is that benefit of the doubt where one loss in March doesn't mean Chicken Little, the sky is falling with this organization?
Well, I don't know if that would ever come across on sports radio or on the text line, because sports radio and the text line and social media were created to complain and scream and yell. So, I mean, C-Dot, you read the text line after the Chiefs lose early, and then that's a dynasty that's still underway across the parking lot. So, no, I don't think there'll ever be true tangible evidence of the Royals receiving the benefit of the doubt, but you know, I think Ned got the benefit of the doubt after he won the World Series from some. But again, it's never going to be all. And again, it's never going to happen on a post-game show. I'm not expecting it. But yeah, you know, if the stadium stuff gets put behind us and a world title is put before us, well, then, yeah, John Sherman and J.J. Piccolo and Matt Quatrero, yeah, I think they would certainly get the benefit of the doubt, because even the way that it ended with Dayton Moore, I think he's still beloved, you know, by Royals fans because he delivered that title. You know, Ned Yost was the shepherd in 2018 and 19 in those miserable seasons, but he was still on his can't tell me nothing tour because he was coming off of that 2015 title, and Ned's still a beloved figure. I mean, there wasn't many people in spring training that were more celebrated by the fans than Ned. The amount of pictures and autographs I saw the Royals Hall of Famer signing out in surprise was, I mean, obviously deserved, but also made me chuckle because of, you know, the surly Ned and, you know, what he used to be. But no, win a world title and you'll get the benefit of the doubt from the level-headed Kansas City sports fans.
That is our guy, Josh Vernier, joining us on the show today. Be sure to check him out later today at Hollywood Casino. Vern will be there. Michael Massey will be there. Kyle Isbell will be there. They have a Q&A starting at 6 o'clock, followed by a meet and greet. The players will be around. They'll say hello. They'll shake some hands. They'll kiss some babies. They'll sign some stuff. It is free to the public. It's a casino, so you got to be 21-year-old to go there. So if you want to go out there, say hello. And all of us from 96.5 The Fan will be there. We're heading there after the show today. Vern, I appreciate you, man. It's baseball season when I'm looking forward to talking to you every Friday, man. Thanks a lot for popping
on. Happy to
today.
Be back, buddy. Thank you very much.